Welcome everyone to this OMFIF podcast with EY on the economic response measures to the COVID crisis. This is John Orchard, CEO of OMFIF. Today we're looking at transmission mechanisms, specifically via the commercial banking sector. How are these institutions dealing with the government-supported lending they've been asked to do? Beneath the headline numbers is a massive new credit work to process, for example. Where have we seen difficulties and how are they being remedied? And what are the success stories so far? And what will be the long-term impact on their business models? Joining us to discuss these topics and others is Jan Bellens, a global banking and capital markets sector leader at EY, who's been working with bank executive teams for 20 years. Jan, please let us know what your role means on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you very much, John. Well, at the moment, like many of you, I'm spending my days for 12-hour long conference and video calls, staying in touch with our clients, discussing their highest priorities, and then connecting our best teams across the different service lines and services that we offer with our clients. We work across assurance, tax, transaction services, and consulting.
Thank you very much. Presumably all of those things in huge demand at the moment. We'll come on specifically to the government-supported lending schemes shortly, but tell me first more broadly how you feel the banking sector is handling the COVID crisis, perhaps how it compares or differs to the financial crisis we had a decade ago.
Yes, thanks, John. And look, I think this is a very different crisis from a decade ago. This is really a global health crisis. The previous crisis was mostly a financial crisis. And that also means that the response of the banks is different. The first priority here has been very much around operational resilience, making sure that customers have access to banking services and that employees are safe and can actually do their job. And I have to say, I think overall, the banking system has held up in that respect very, very well. I think overall, bank boards and executive committees can be happy with how banks have been making sure that people can make payments, can access loans, and basically can access their bank accounts.
Great, thanks, Jan. And we'll come on to the medium-term outlook for banks in a little while. Take me through some of these schemes that have been set up by government request that are being transmitted through the commercial banking system, and tell me a bit about how they're being implemented.
Of course, John. And as you point out, I think the second component is how can banks support customers and support the broader economy? And there we have seen measures taken by the banks themselves on their own account, which includes fee waivers and forbearance measures. And then I think, as you point out, in many countries and many jurisdictions, banks have been called in to transmit government stimulus towards the economy, mostly, but not exclusively, towards small businesses, which I think has gained most visibility.
And what out of the schemes that you've seen implemented so far, take me through what you think has worked very well, and perhaps we can come on in a moment to things that are not working quite as well yet.
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that, of course, when governments design schemes to get money into the economy and it's to the hands of customers and businesses, it's important to think through what are the implications for the institutions that will be responsible for that. And so what we have seen is a massive effort by the banks to basically do the right thing and quickly get that money out in the market. We've seen examples like Switzerland, where a scheme was co-designed with the top banks in the market and where a package of over 20 billion Swiss francs of SME stimulus was very, very quickly distributed into the market. A relatively simple process designed mostly on a digital basis with the objective for an SME that applies to be funded in 30 minutes or so. Didn't quite get there, but most SMEs that requested the subsidy and the loan were able to get their funding in a few hours or at least in a day or so. So a lot of SMEs in the Swiss market have been funded very, very quickly.
Tell me a little bit about how they got that right. What contributed to that scheme being designed well, and what's enabled it to be executed well?
I think one of the key success factors is it was really thought through from an end-to-end perspective. And I think when the government was thinking about this program, it also solicited advice from the banks in the market on how to do that right, which means that the process was designed with online data entry. The form itself will be used as the credit contract. It's signed, scanned, and mailed by email, could potentially be sent by snail mail. And then the banks had, of course, to go through a number of checks for risk purposes, but those were also relatively limited. So overall, I think a process that was co-designed with the banks and that had a fast turnaround time in mind from the get-go.
So in summary, in Switzerland, the processes were designed in tandem with the design of the aim of the scheme.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Thanks very much, Jan. Tell me, where have we seen problems? Tell me about a scheme that hasn't worked well yet, but you think could be remedied.
So thank you, John. And look, I think obviously it is important to ensure that the money gets in the right hands. That is those businesses and customers that are in need the most. It's also important to ensure that there is no fraud or anti-money laundering issues that come through these schemes, certainly when these massive amounts of funding are being distributed and when banks are the entity responsible for that transmission, which leads to the fact that certainly in the US, for example, where the BA lending scheme with payment protection for small businesses, where a massive amount of stimulus has been put into the economy, started off in a first wave with $376 billion, and in a second wave where another $310 billion is being distributed to small business customers. If you put that type of volume into the market and you require the institutions to put a lot of checks in place to make sure that the funding goes to those that are needy and that justify all of the conditions, that of course is a much more complex exercise and also makes it a lot more difficult for banks to make that happen. So there has been a bit of a scramble to make sure that the banks can leverage technology solutions or solutions to get this right.
With PPP, where the challenges have been so far, you think it principally descends most of all from the sheer scale of it?
There's the scale, and there's the fact that I think banks certainly are cautious to make sure that they are checking off all of the conditions for those loans to be handed out. Because, of course, after the fact, banks do not want to be held accountable for handing out funds for customers that didn't justify it or are also very, very keen to avoid fraud challenges that might pop up in this program as well. So banks have to really tread a fine line between, you know, getting the money out in a speedy way while at the same time making sure that they don't trip up over any of the conditions that the government has put in place for these loans to be transmitted to customers.
So people tend to make mistakes when they're doing things in a hurry. You're saying in the US that the banks are mindful of that and trying to avoid future legal liabilities and other liabilities by rushing through processes at this stage.
Indeed, it is a fine balancing act, and correctly so. So I think all of the banks are keen to support the economy and to support the small business customers. At the same time, fraud risk or know your customer or anti-money laundering risk do have to be watched out for.
Are there lessons there in terms of process, perhaps from the Swiss example you mentioned earlier? Are there form designs, process designs, which could make this work quicker in the US?
I think certainly so, John, and I think that's also already a bit of a segue to some of the longer term impacts of this. I think a lot of the banks, and not just the banks, but some of the government institutions have realized that there was still an awful lot of paper shuffling in some of these processes. And quite a few banks have actually now seen that even in a matter of days or weeks, they can put in place technology solutions, or at least solutions that have support from technology and data sources, to actually put in place a faster and better process. So quite a few executives commented to me that they've done work that normally takes them 6 to 12 months to digitize, that all of a sudden that was possible in a week. And that is, I think, quite a wake-up call for some of the banks that it is actually possible when the urgency is there. So I think overall, not just because of this, but overall, we will see a much accelerated digitization of some of the processes and the administration that is linked to this particular process, but also to others.
I heard very much similar things. Jan, one bank chief executive told me his digital plan had advanced more in the first 4 weeks of the lockdown than the preceding 4 years of his tenure at that bank. What are you seeing in terms of the digitization of banking business plans? Presumably some will start to speed up the rationalization of their branch networks and so forth. It might make it more profitable to be a universal bank as a result. Tell me a little bit about the digital side of bank business models, partly propelled by this crisis.
Oh, thanks, John. So banks at this stage are very much looking into return to physical office and what their workforce will look like and how that workforce will operate. I think the digital acceleration and their digital plans will be driven by what we can observe in terms of consumer behavior and employee behavior going forward. I think there's definitely a discussion going on about their real estate, but I don't think anybody has really pulled the trigger yet. And I think we are in very uncertain times. And I think many banks are really looking at how that consumer behavior and employee behavior will evolve. Interestingly enough, we recently did a consumer survey, and somewhat surprisingly so, even though the exercise was done across five large markets, UK, France, Germany, US, and Canada, 24% of those consumers said that they would bank more online even beyond the crisis, which is a good number, but not a spectacularly high number, and is actually lower than what people would say that they would shop online or seek health services online than those services. So yes, I think everybody has definitely that in mind. I think banks will definitely continue to invest heavily in terms of their digital transformation, but I wouldn't close those branches as of yet.
Okay, thank you, Jan. And I know that certainly some bank chief executives think that branches are the best place to cross-sell products, so they still have that utility for a while yet. Just still on technology and processes, do you think there'll be any medium-term lessons from the credit analysis and credit disbursement work that is taking place because of these guaranteed schemes from governments?
Yeah, and this is where I think a lot of the boards and exco's at the moment are discussing quite a bit. As one of the board members was telling me, the risk teams are giddy with excitement about the different scenarios that they can develop in terms of how the book will evolve. But this is also a real challenge for, I think, the boards and the exco's. I think one of the challenges is really the degree of uncertainty at the moment that is driven by not knowing how long this will take, not knowing whether we might see different waves, and the overall, I think, economic uncertainty, which then translates into what is the actual risk that I have taken on, how much of it is supported by government funding and government stimulus, and how much of it is not. I think boards and exco's are generally concerned, and rightly so, about what one executive called the day of reckoning. So obviously, the massive government stimulus that has been put into the markets, up to $10 trillion globally, is tremendous. But if this continues to be longer, what does that mean for banks? Banks that are currently, as we mentioned earlier, walking that fine line. You are lending to a small business to help it through the crisis. But what does that mean if, for example, after 6 months, this is still not resolved and the small business can no longer sustain that? That becomes potentially, you know, a non-performing loan onto the bank's book. How do we deal with that? And how do the banks deal with that? So there's quite a lot of concern about taking on these loans at the moment, correctly so, government stimulus and clearly doing the right thing for customers and for the economy. At the same time, difficulty about how do I assess that risk, certainly on small business and mid-corps.
I wanted to explore that a little bit more, Jan. I noticed from your EY materials that you're already advising banks on the medium term with respect to how to think about and deal with NPLs, no doubt they will go up. Tell me a little bit about how banks are thinking about that and preparing for it.
In many ways, John, and obviously banks have learned from the previous crisis. They are well capitalized. They continue to stress test their books. And I think they have a pretty solid view on where the different risks are in the balance sheet. So they are preparing actively for that. They are preparing to look at loan restructuring. They are looking at credit workouts. They are even in some cases already thinking about schemes to operate certain assets with special purpose vehicles and get additional investors into those assets to operate them while they are in challenging times. So that's going to be a very active space. And I think as we also observe across the markets, I think people with that type of expertise and that type of skill set to help corporates and businesses restructure their capital and get through this crisis, I think will be critically important in the next year or so.
But broadly speaking, it sounds like you think they're definitely getting ready for it. It's not going to be a surprise.
Oh, absolutely.
Related topic, tell me a bit about how regulators and supervisors are helping and the extent that they're offering forbearance to banks being put under strain at the moment.
Yes, so I think the good thing that we have observed is also, of course, the regulators have learned a lot through the last decade and from the previous crisis. And so I think what was good is that there's good and transparent conversations between the banks, top of the house, and the regulators. And I think regulators have also been proactive to make sure that banks can play their role in supporting the economy at this crucial time. That means in some cases, postponing certain stress tests, for example, which we've seen across markets, postponing certain supervisory actions, and also providing some relief on, for example, certain risk limits or policies that are done in full transparency and in good communication between the banks and the regulators. So yes, the regulators, I think, have been in close contact with the banks' boards and are, well, not really letting go of their regulations. They do release some of the immediate pressure where they feel it's safe and secure to do so.
Okay, thanks, Jan. Not to mention, of course, the fact that they are, broadly speaking, twice as well capitalized as they were going into the crisis 10 or so years ago.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, I wanted to discuss the fine balance that we've been talking about already, which is how banks are managing to balance their social duty, for sake of argument, and their fiduciary duty to protect profitability. How are banks thinking about this?
So I think the banks are and the banks' boards are very actively thinking about this. I think this is certainly at the onset of the crisis and still right now, I think banks are well aware that they didn't have the best reputation in society coming out of the previous crisis and even going into this crisis. And I think bank boards are well aware that playing their supportive role for the economy and for customers is the way to improve their reputation and basically really show responsible banking to society and to customers. At the same time, that's a very, very fine balancing act. You know, back to this challenge of, at this stage, providing a loan to customers who need it, but also taking care of the medium to longer term when, you know, it might not be fully clear whether that business is actually going to survive this crisis in the first place or whether it was viable in the first place. So it's a really, really fine balancing act, which banks, I think, are very well aware of. I think that has also been demonstrated by the fact that quite a lot of banks in the US and Europe have made either formal or informal commitments not to lay off staff in this calendar year, or to put certain restructuring programs with layoffs, to put those on hold. I think that fits, again, into that same fine balancing act. But it's never ending, and it will remain a fine balance, I think, for the banks to do that.
That sounds tough. On top of that, of course, banks, particularly in Europe, have been waiting for a while for interest rates eventually to rise to help them with net interest margin and so forth. That looks even further away, although they seem to have stopped going down and we're using quantitative easing measures instead. Is this crisis putting bank business models under strain again through the very low for long interest rate environment?
It certainly puts the return on equity targets under strain, as you already point out, John, because of the credit provisions and then also because of the interest rate environment. And again, at this stage, there's a lot of uncertainty in the overall economy. Banks are well capitalized, so they do have good staying power, but it remains to be seen what happens over the next 6 to 12 months to see how overall bank profitability will evolve.
What do you think, Jan, finishing up, are the long-term lessons, perhaps even benefits from the crisis for the banking sector? What do you see happening to it as a result of the COVID crisis?
Well, I think one, and together with bank boards and executive committees, I do believe that I would certainly hope for the reputation of banks to actually increase through this crisis, where banks really play their role as a facilitator for the economy and for customers doing business and going about their business. So that's certainly one component. And I think that certainly banks that have a purpose in mind and that really think about responsible banking across ESG targets, that they come out strong out of this crisis, not just in terms of reputation, but also hopefully in terms of growth prospects, I think would be great. That's, by the way, confirmed by our consumer survey, where we find that the majority of customers put very high premium on those institutions that are seen to be doing the right thing during this crisis. And then I think secondly, John, the other thing is I do think that some of that discussion we had earlier on the digital acceleration, where banks had to become much more agile in a very, very short period of time and leveraged technologies, artificial intelligence, and some innovations very, very quickly to serve customers better. I trust that some of that will stick as well and hopefully prepare banks better for the next decade.
Super. Jan Bellens, thank you very much. Sounds like there is, despite the very difficult challenges socially, health-wise, economically, there is potentially some benefit ultimately in the way that banks are seen, particularly in contrast with how they were seen 10 years ago, and indeed how they operate. Jan, thank you very much for talking to us today.